What do you think? Should we go? We're going. We're live. Okay. Live on the internet. Welcome, everyone, to Automated Strike Zone, Perspectives on the Technology and How It May Affect the Game. Before we get started again, huge thanks to everybody at Sabre for this has been an amazingly smooth conference despite all the difficulties and the live streaming, and hats off to them. First, our panelists, Bobby Evans. Bobby, can you raise your hand? There's Bobby. After graduating from, and I hope I get this from Wikipedia, Bobby, I hope this is correct. After graduating from the University of North Carolina, Bobby worked in the commissioner's office for 3 years. He went to work for the Giants in 1994 and served as the Giants' general manager from 2015 through 2018 season. Ben Jedlevec, known Ben for a long time. Ben is the director of engineering data quality for Major League Baseball. Ben, someday you'll have to tell me exactly what that means. Previously, Ben was the president of Baseball Info Solutions and was the co-author of volumes 3 and 4 of the beloved Fielding Bible. Volume 5 is just now coming out, by the way. I've got it at my house, and it's great. Recommend it. And sitting here to my left is Wayne Griner, the president of Quality of Pitch Baseball. So welcome, everybody. Automated strike zone. It's been a hot topic for a long time. Why is it a topic? Well, it's a topic because human beings are imperfect, right? Depending on which metric you look at, umpires miss between 5 and 10% of called pitches. Some people are shocked by that number, but the great majority of those missed, put that in quotes, pitches are on the edges and would be missed by, could be missed by anyone, even the greatest umpires in the world, which is basically who we're seeing on the field. And I suspect that if we had perfect measurement, the figures would be even lower than 5 or 10%. That said, with the ability of our technology, existing technology, the cameras, when umpires do miss pitches or when they seem to miss pitches, it becomes a story. We probably all remember young Brennan Miller and Aaron Boone last July. If the Nationals had not won the World Series last fall, the plate umpire in Game 5 would have been a big would be a big story now. Not that either of those umpires necessarily had bad games, but there was a perception. And when you have a perception that an umpire is having a rough game or misses a big pitch, we're always going to come back to, why are human beings doing this? And we can get into why human beings do it at length, but the discussion isn't going to go away. So in the short term, what have we seen? Last summer, in the second half of the season, the Atlantic League used an automated strike zone. The Arizona Fall League, right here in Phoenix, used the automated strike zone, I believe, in one ballpark for two teams, or maybe it's two ballparks, but it's we've seen it. There's a lot of data now, and I think Ben can speak to this. There's a lot of data on how well it works. So, Ben, I would like to start with you, just your sort of executive summary of the implementation to this point and the technology that's used for the automated strike zone.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, everybody, and thanks for to Sabre, as you said at the beginning, Rob, just for continuing to host this event in light of recent events and everything. I would say on this topic in particular, the automated strike zone is an interesting one, given just how far the technology's evolved in really just the last like 3 to 5 years. We're at the place where we can have this conversation, and it's a realistic possibility for the not too distant future. And You know, that's just a testament to the technology industry overall. And we at Major League Baseball are, you know, going to try to continue to use technology to improve the games, not just the, you know, kind of the accuracy of the on the field product, but also the experience for the fans. And this is one of those areas where, you know, consistency is desired. You know, it's and the umpires do a tremendously great job, consistent job as a whole. But if there's ways that we can make kind of improve the product, then we're certainly going to take a look at them. And you know, as mentioned at the top, it's the technology has really put us in a place where we can have this conversation and really explore kind of the edge cases and the intangibles and the human elements that that could be impacted by such a technological change.
Ben, can you describe the actual hardware that's been used to this point?
Sure. You know, it's really kind of two separate components, right? There's one component that is involved in tracking the baseball and calibrating that to the field of play and then to the strike zone specifically. And you can use, you know, there's a number of different technologies out there that are capable of tracking a baseball in real time and providing information about where that pitch was. Was it in the strike zone or not? And there's a lot of details around, you know, whether you use, we're going with as a lot of you probably heard in the presentation on Friday, and if you didn't, you should check out the live stream that Greg Kane and Clay Nunnally that is archived on YouTube by Saber now. It's a great overview of the Hawkeye system that we're putting in at the major league level, and so that is certainly one of the technologies that can be used to power the ball tracking component of this. And then the other part of it that probably gets overlooked is just how do you get that message? How do you get that ball or strike, you know, binary outcome relayed to the umpire in real time so that he can make a call and he can actually relay the call to the players and to the fans and everybody else without disrupting the flow of the game? So there's a lot of different, you know, that's one of the areas where we've probably spent the most time, you know, given the technological improvements on the ball tracking side. We've spent a lot of our time really focusing on just how to get that message from the tracking system to the umpire in a, you know, preferably a headphone of some kind. And so we've tried a few different ways of doing that, from iPods in their pockets and that are connected to Wi-Fi, where the message gets transmitted via Wi-Fi through a mobile app. And then that relays it to a headphone that they have in their ear that just says ball or strike. And the umpire makes the call accordingly after, of course, you know, considering the other elements beyond just whether the pitch was in the strike zone or not, did the batter swing, and all of those elements that are still in play, that the umpire's got to make, you know, his job's actually changing and becoming hard in different ways now, because he has to kind of think, he has to process the information in his ear with the information that he sees differently than he has historically.
Now, but I want to establish a sort of context, and Ben, you're free to abstain if you like, but Bobby and Wayne, at least, and I'm going to participate too, could you just raise your hand if you think we will see an automated strike zone in Major League Baseball within the next 5 seasons?
Yeah, I'm going to abstain from this one.
You're going to abstain. So okay, how about the next 3 seasons?
Yeah. Hopefully.
Just one, I'm the only one in the next 3. Okay, that's interesting. So, Bobby, what do you see as the limits of the implementation, which is to say, you don't think it's going to happen within the next 3 years, perhaps? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's probably 3 to 4 years. I think that probably 3 years of working its way into minor league games and working out all the particulars to, you know, and it is another element of negotiation with the umpires union. So I think that there's enough hurdles that it'll probably take at least 3 years, but certainly by 5 years we should be able to see the technology in Major League games on a regular basis. And I think that it's really just the amount of getting players, clubs, and the technology, you know, ready along with the logistics. I think that certainly we're going to see it soon.
Wayne.
Yeah, I think what might delay it slightly, as Ben has already mentioned, is the switch from TrackMan over to Hawkeye. I'm sure MLB wants to see how that's going to all, you know, work and maybe proceed a little more cautiously that way. But definitely it's coming, and yeah, we, from a QOP or quality of pitch perspective, You know, we are already using an automated strike zone within our algorithm, so we would embrace that if that is brought to light.
Now, Ben, I don't know to what degree you're able to speak to this, but the when I've talked to people about this, including a longtime major league umpire, one of his concerns is, or the question he has is about pitches that, according to the rule book, are certainly strikes, but they're just simply not called strikes because nobody would buy it. The umpire can't sell it. The batter's not going to believe it. The manager's not going to believe it. Have you sort of thought about that question? And how, you know, there was a famous example, and I thought that it went pretty smoothly in the Atlantic League last year. I think everybody, there was pretty good buy-in from most of the players and umpires and coaching staffs. I recall there was one incident where a player was ejected for arguing because a strike was called on a ball that essentially or nearly landed in the dirt. It was just a breaking ball that clipped probably the very front edge of the strike zone as it was going down. And that's a tough one. So that's one of the reservations that people at the major league level at least seem to have.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's something we've spent a lot of time thinking about and trying to understand the human element and the kind of the differences and the impact that this change might have, good or bad, and trying to make sure that that we can align this and implement this in a way that's only going to be a positive for the game. There's all sorts of things you can do. I mean, you can theoretically like look at changing the rules of what the strike zone is supposed to be. And it's, you know, relatively trivial. My colleagues who are doing the programming for this are probably going to debate this a little bit, but it's relatively trivial to change a couple lines of code to redefine the elements of the exact dimensions of the strike zone. If you want to, find a strike zone that better aligns with the expectations and kind of the historical aspect of what the strike zone has been called. So, you know, really, this is an area where technology makes things possible that, previously have not been possible to get a consistent strike zone across the league, regardless of what park or what umpire or batter or pitcher or anything else. We want to make sure that we implement that in a way that makes the game better for all involved.
And Bobby, I think this is gets back to what you were talking about in terms of transitioning. You could certainly cut off, say, the front 2 inches of the plate, if not physically, in terms of what the actual strike zone is how it's being read. But there've got to be unintended consequences when you change the strike zone that you cannot foresee until you actually do it. And I think maybe that's sort of your point. When you have enough data from the Atlantic League or the minor leagues, perhaps then you can at least begin to get a feel for what sort of effects that you'd have in the majors if you did that.
Yeah, and let me be clear. I think this is moving, very quickly. I mean, I think that just the progress with the Atlantic League, the progress with the Arizona Fall League, and I think the technology is incredibly, Ben can speak to this better than I, incredibly close or virtually ready. I think there's just a lot of other mechanisms that need to get, clarified and cleared in order to actually implement it. As soon as we start seeing it in Major League spring training, I think that'll really be the final testing ground. And again, whether they implement this throughout minor league baseball after the fact or before the fact, we'll have some bearing on this as well. But I do think that the technology is going to give us as true a strike zone as I think anybody could want. And I, cutting off 2 inches, that's going to be another debate. And again, I don't know that ultimately the technology necessarily requires that. I mean, Ben can again speak to that as well.
Wayne, have you been able to notice a systematic difference between the strike zone in the rule book and the strike zone as it's actually called on the field? Because that's really what we're talking about here. That's where the change would come if the strike zone isn't officially changed.
Right. Yeah, so we introduced our QOP metric back at this conference 5 years ago, 2015. So we've been calculating Major League Baseball pitch quality now for the last 5 years. And after calculating over 700,000 pitches per year, going back now all the way to 08, we have over 10 million pitches where we've been able to calculate the quality. And we use 6 different measurements within our algorithm, so 4 that are movement-based, but then obviously location and velocity are extremely important. So as we look specifically at that location coefficient, it's been interesting to see what's happened over the last number of years. So it appears back in the mid-90s, you know, over the last 20 years, that some umpires, maybe not all of them, are granting that strike call to those balls that we know are low or even below the strike zone the way it should be called. So really interesting to see that that's happened, and some pitchers have definitely taken advantage of that. And just one example I could give you would be a guy like Justin Verlander, who has above average command on all of his different pitch types, but also is exceptional when it comes to vertical break on all his pitches. So there's an example of a guy that has a reputation for being around the strike zone. He is granted a lot of strike calls being around the plate, but he does have a lot of pitches that end up actually being below the strike zone and still getting the strike call. So somebody like that might be penalized a little bit with an automated strike zone. Now, could Justin Verlander adapt? Of course he could. But we're seeing right now there's one example of a pitcher that could be affected by this type of implementation.
And I've seen a study showing Clayton Kershaw getting a number of close pitches called in his favor, presumably because he has such great stuff. And Ben, have you seen, I know MLB StatCast measures something called nasty factor, and it seems to me that the nastier the pitch, the harder it is to call. Have you noticed that sort of effect?
I don't know that we've, at least I don't think I've personally studied the nasty factor. I mean, I know we've done an analysis of different pitch types in certain locations and tried to evaluate, you know, kind of the differences between the strike zones there. And, you know, we've got a long history of, you know, just kind of evaluating umpires and tracking their progress and helping train umpires around the strike zone and such. And so there's a lot of data we've been tracking on that front. And, but again, it comes down to, you know, what is the best compromise or best style of play, best strike zone that for the whole game moving forward? Is it something closer to the rule book strike zone? Does that need to be potentially adjusted to align with historical preference or something else?
Well, it certainly seems to me that essentially this is a zero sum game. You would have some winners, some losers. Bobby, maybe you could speak to that generally, the sorts of pitchers that you might be looking for if the strike zone was enforced precisely as it's in the rule book. And also, we have a question from the audience. Would you worry about veterans having an adjustment period versus young players who had worked with this in the minor leagues and in the Arizona Fall League, places like that?
I think it's going to be an adjustment for pitchers immensely, just from the fact that they so much, you know, want to be on the edge of the plate. They want to get as little of the plate as they can to hopefully create enough deception where, one, it's either taken for a strike or two, it's enough out of the zone or deception that they get a swing and miss. So I think that, you know, when the strike zone is really fine and mechanical and there's really no gray area, you know, by way of technology, yeah, I think it's going to be an adjustment for pitchers to, you know, to really, you know, they're going to need to get that swing and miss because they're not going to get that called strike, you know, just outside the zone that the Brandon Belt, who's maybe the best umpire in uniform, you know, as a hitter, that just won't swing at it. And so they're going to have to find a way to, you know, as far as their stuff to create the deception, whether that's, you know, whether that's in velocity or deception in angle or deception in overall movement and stuff, because, you know, you're not going to get those edgy strikes that you've been getting. And that, you know, I think that's not necessarily unique for the veteran. I mean, certainly will be an adjustment for the veteran at the big league level and not getting strikes that they've gotten. But even for the minor league player that's getting his first big league call up, he's been getting those calls in the minor league. So he's going to have to work in a much tighter zone, and it may really benefit the hitter.
Wayne?
Yeah, I think, you know, if this gets implemented, this automatic strike zone, what we would want to monitor and find very interesting is, you know, at present, most MLB pitchers go through early in the game feeling out the umpire. You know, they're trying to determine what is the strike zone going to be today. So most pitchers are going to, you know, be slightly off the plate, see if they get the call, and if they do, they're going to take more liberties and obviously try and expand the strike zone, which only makes sense. Once that exercise is futile and there's no need to go through that process anymore, what we would anticipate is a lot of pitchers, especially those that have been successful working ahead in the count, could be much more aggressive. And what they could do is pound the zone earlier in counts, but not just that, but actually rely more on their primary pitches rather than going to their secondary pitch types. Now, what is that going to do through the course of the game? You know, are we going to see pitchers, if that's the strategy they have to take, maybe now they are getting three times through the batting order, they may be forced to only get two times through the batting order. We might be going to the bullpens earlier. We might have more openers, not fewer openers, to start game. All of those kind of ramifications. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how aggressive pitchers would be. And then the flip side of that is, are the hitters going to be more aggressive? Knowing that some pitchers are going to have to pound the strike zone, instead of throwing around the strike zone, they're going to have to throw more in the strike zone, and will hitters take advantage of that? So it's a give and take, it's a back and forth. Who's going to adapt the best to determine the pitch outcome?
I referenced unintended consequences earlier. Well, this isn't exactly unintended or intended, but it's certainly a consequence. We have been probably every analytics conference that I've attended, or nearly all of them, there has been a presentation about pitch framing, which has been such a popular subject. First in this sort of setting, and not long afterward, actually in Major League Baseball, when you could measure it, that's presumably going to go away completely. Pitch framing is, I would assume, utterly irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Bobby, how do you feel about that? If you're building a team, all of a sudden, that particular skill, which we've come to think is so important, all of a sudden is meaningless. What does that do to your roster construction or your player development?
Yeah, of course, catcher framing has been in part of the game for forever. It's just been more recent that we've been able to actually measure it. So it is kind of something that's addictive. So you are going to miss it. Those of us who have depended on it, I will say that for the catcher, I think that allows him to, focus on other aspects of his game. I mean, he's really just receiving the ball and then, making sure he's, holding runners, calling a good game. It just takes that element away. And there's really only so many guys that are really all that elite at it anyway. I think it's kind of disappointing to lose that part of the game, but I think there's enough going on back there that I think the catchers can then, zone in on other parts of their game that are just as important and obviously will have more impact given that won't be a factor anymore.
Well, it must be a bit disorienting for catchers who are being trained, I would say as we speak, but nobody's being trained at this moment, but for the last few years, catchers have been working a lot harder on framing, generally speaking, mm-hmm. than they used to, and they must be paying attention and realize that at some point in the not-distant future, that skill's not going to be all that useful, so I wonder if they're already having those thoughts.
Rob, can I say something on
sure,
that?
Sure, go ahead.
Just from a pitch quality perspective, the philosophy of what we do has always been to try and measure those things that the pitcher himself can control, and that's why an automated strike zone where it's not a subjective decision by the umpire, the reason we would favor that is that's something that right now the pitcher can't control, but an automated strike zone, he can control where he throws the baseball. When it comes to the catcher, what would the benefit to the pitcher that we would see is if he doesn't have to frame each pitch is, later in the games, I'm not sure what the fatigue factor is when catchers have to frame each and every pitch, but we would see the benefit, as Bobby said, controlling the running game, that catchers can get in a much better throwing position to receive the baseball. Therefore, they're going to control the running game much better, which would benefit the pitcher. But also things like later in games, blocking balls in the dirt, which is going to be a huge benefit to the pitcher. But even things like fielding their position, if they don't have to frame pitches throughout the game, later in the ball game when that hitter lays down that bunt and they can field it in a better position and throw the runner out, that's, again, a huge benefit. So I'm not sure what the fatigue factor is for framing, but it's something that would be very interesting to look at if we go to an automated strike zone.
Well, and the overarching effect, presumably, is that catchers will hit better.
Yeah, exactly.
They won't be as tired, and they simply won't be chosen because they're good pitch framers.
Yeah.
There have been some catchers in the last 10 or 20 years who would not be allowed to catch in today's game because their framing has been measured as being too poor. By the way, if anybody has questions here in the audience, there are cards in the back. If you're watching on our streaming channel, you can pop into the chat and send those along, and I will see them. Ben, this is for you. I can't speak to the veracity of the account because I haven't read about it, but maybe you can respond. In the Atlantic League last season, when this was first introduced, there were some players who had very big strike zones as they lied about their height. I mean, obviously, they didn't want the big strike zone, but there certainly are players who are not as tall as their listed height. What other human factors might influence the system? And, Bob, you're free to speak to this, too.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that's an area we've looked at pretty closely, and just trying to set the strike zone, the tops and the bottom. I without getting into specifics, I think that's something another area, just kind of doubling back to the initial conversation, is that's something that I think, you know, there's a rule book definition of the top and the bottom of the strike zone, and then there's a practical definition as well. And it's something that we're going to continue to study very closely and try to find out what's the right strike zone for the game going forward, you know, to strike the right balance that's appealing to fans and works for players and coaches and umpires and everybody else. So that's an area of ongoing discussion and evaluation.
Yeah. I mean, I think that from a front office, player development, coaching staff, you know, player perspective, I mean, I think once it's clearly established and defined, I think everyone will get used to it. I mean, you do have a defined strike zone in the rule book, and as long as the technology will allow to read the appropriate zone based on the hitter that's at the plate, I think just as the umpire has to read it, I would assume that the technology would. And I think it'll ultimately be an advantage as people get used to it.
So I have a question here, and it says for Ben, but this is a question for the whole panel, everybody in the audience, every baseball fan, really. Ben, I don't know if you can speak to this directly, but we'll start with you. It is the single most interesting question around this subject. I will ask the question and then I'll give a little context. Has MLB considered using the automated strike zone to generate a specific style of play, or could it adjust on the fly? And I think the general question here is, can MLB make a decision that, and now we're getting into my own personal preferences and biases, but result in fewer strikeouts, fewer home runs, more batted balls in play, a greater diversity of events? Most of the people that I talk to would like to see that. I suspect that both Ben and Bobby and Wayne would like to see that. Mm-hmm. I know there are people out there who would love to see the game be mostly home runs and strikeouts. None of them are my friends, but I do know they're out there. And to me, an automated strike zone seems like a wonderful opportunity to move toward a different and, in my opinion, better style of play. It's not at all clear to me that A, Major League Baseball or the Players Association have the will or the ability to move in that direction in a concerted fashion, because of both the politics involved and also, again, unintended consequences. Can you really model all these different factors to arrive at 10% more ground balls? I don't know, which is why I'm asking the question. So, Ben, we'll start with you, and I know you might be limited to what you can say about internal discussions, but please lead us off?
Yeah, I mean, without being too specific on this, I think your question gets right at the mindset that is very important to us. And I think we as an organization, the commissioner has set some organization goals, and you know, one of them relates to the use of technology to improve the game, whether that's just the product on the field or really just the experience for fans. You know, how they interact with the game, how they consume games, whether it's watching them live or consuming data and statistics or other content around the game. These are all priorities for the league. And so, you know, we certainly see technology. You know, baseball has a strong history with technology. We've been tracking things in baseball dating back to, you know, Henry Chadwick's box scores. And so we've been tracking data and have a lot of things kind of going for us historically. And we're going to continue that into this next generation of technology and continue to study them as best you can and carefully, of course. You know, it's I think your point about unintended consequences, I think Wayne mentioned as well, is well taken. And that's why, you know, we do the partnership with the Atlantic League, I think, is a really interesting one where they've been great partners in letting kind of experimenting with some new rules, some ideas, and cooperating with Major League Baseball in that way and giving the players a chance to get exposed to some of these ideas and kind of getting their feedback from the players and the coaches, the feedback that can help guide us towards making the product at the Major League level better. And you know, looking at, you know, going back a couple of questions ago, we were talking about catcher framing becoming a diminished value. But if you also consider one of the rules in play in the Atlantic League last year was the step off rule on pickoff throws, requiring that both lefties and righties step off the rubber before they commit a pickoff throw. All of it, you know, and if you look at the data from the Atlantic League last year, you saw a significant, something on the order of 50% increase in stolen bases per game. You know, all of a sudden you've just answered your question about how do you, you know, what is a catcher going to do anymore? We're going to have a different kind of player as a catcher defensively going forward. Well, there you go. Now all of a sudden the running game is a lot more important than it was previously if you start considering the impact of those sorts of rules. And so, you know, what we can do with technology, I think the commissioner has been very proactive in kind of considering how technology can improve the game going forward, building upon the success of instant replay and other such things.
Bobby, do you think that, first of all, it's possible to sort out all these different consequences to arrive at an endpoint? And second, do you think it's something that the players could be on board with eventually?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're changing the strike zone, I mean, it's always going to have, you know, a challenge to convince, you know, the players, coaches, those on the field, you know, how that is an advantage or in the best interest of the game. I mean, they're going to have, that's going to be a challenge for them. But I think the reality is, I mean, I think that once there is a change and if it's something that you give a long enough period of time, it could have the desired outcome that you're looking for, but the hitters will adjust. I mean, if you just, for example, the only change to the strike zone is that you add 3 inches on the outside part of the plate, you know, so hitters are just going to move closer to the plate, you know, so they're going to adjust. I mean, depending on where that strike zone is, but again, I think that doing a lot of maneuvering of the strike zone, it has to be. It has to be taken seriously, and it's not something that you can change year to year. It's something that you know, again, there's already going to be a significant adjustment to the technology, directing the call of strike or ball. So the adjustment of the strike zone in different directions, up and down and outside, inside. I mean, those are, as much as they may give desired outcomes, they're not going to be overly excited by that on the field, just because, again, they're used to a strike zone for, what consistency they have now with the umpires, whether it be at the minor league or major league level.
And Bobby, I would assume that this would have to be negotiated with the players.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, all major league on-field rules are considered, something that the commissioner, again, he has some unilateral power, but you know, all those rules at some level enter into negotiation from the commissioner's office and the players union. But anytime it involves, the umpires as well, there's obviously, discussion. Now, of course, once there's automated strike zone, and that's been settled with the umpires union. The adjustment of that strike zone won't has much impact on the umpire himself. It'll then just be really between the union and the commissioner's office.
So here's one from the audience. How will the automated strike zone affect player and manager interactions with umpires? And I think clear, I want to expand that and wonder how this would affect the pace of play. We're presumably going to have fewer arguments about balls and strikes or fewer step outs or while the batter says something under his breath, but would this improve pace of play? Do you have any data on that just from the Atlantic League, Ben?
I'm sure that we've looked at that. I don't recall the answer on that. I think there's merit to the idea, at least, that it could improve pace of play in terms of that. I think we learned last year in the Atlantic League that it's not going to eliminate challenging the umpires, even when on ball and strike calls. There's some good YouTube videos of that, but it'll be interesting to kind of see how that settles in with time to see what the dynamic becomes. And, you know, it's hopefully it's a more productive and constructive one, building on the relationships they already have, which are overwhelmingly positive.
Bobby, I think we all, we have a sort of nostalgic vision of arguments between umpires and managers in particular, often about balls and strikes. Obviously, there are a lot of nostalgic things that have gone away that we ultimately don't miss a whole lot, but is this something that you would miss?
Yeah, I mean, the human interaction is obviously is exciting part of the game and has been for a long time. And it'll definitely be different. I guess, you know, instead of the fact that you'll have the ability to call or, you know, request a replay, maybe there'll be the ability of the manager gets one opportunity during the game to ask that the technology be recalibrated, in between innings so that it's, you know, as accurate as possible, Ben. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that the recalibration is once a year. Maybe the umpires can, or the managers can get a chance to recalibrate once per series. I don't know.
Rob, can I comment on that?
Sure, go ahead, Wayne.
If you know, with Hawkeye now being in place, if let's say MLB went down the path of professional tennis, let's say, which already uses Hawkeye, it's interesting how the chair umpire and the line umpires are making the call, right? Is the ball in or out? But then the players are allowed so many challenges, right, throughout the course of the game. So it'd be very interesting to just have an open mind and see what that could look like for Major League Baseball if they did allow a coach or players, like we said, to have so many challenges throughout the course of the game on a ball or strike call. So.
Right.
You know, I'll just add, like, you know, I from a personal experience, I remember in sixth grade, I was playing a basketball game and I drew my fifth foul without even touching an opposing player and was fouled out of the game as a result. In sixth grade, you're not allowed to argue with the referees all that much. And my dad was the coach. I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have allowed that anyways. But, you know, for me, that was actually I still remember that 2 decades later as a kind of a turning point in my basketball experience. And one of the reasons that I stopped playing basketball and enjoying the game of basketball as much, just because of some of those frustrating moments like that. And, you know, that's why something like this is really an opportunity kind of improve the game and to eliminate some of those frustrating moments. You don't want to remember that, a crucial call that made the difference in your game or your team season or that sort of thing. You want to see the players decide the outcome on the field in their own right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Ben, a question from the audience. Do you foresee concerns about technical difficulties during a game? And it's, you know, there's an interesting dynamic that I'm just now considering, which is what if the technology blinks out during a game and your umpires have not spent the last X number of years training to call balls and strikes? Do you just stop the game until everything's back online?
So what we do right now in the Atlantic League is if there's some sort of malfunction, especially given we don't have quite the full infrastructure and support staff on hand at an Atlantic League game that we do at a Major League game. And so if the technology has some sort of malfunction, in the Atlantic League or somewhere else, you know, Salt River Field, where we were testing it in the AFL last year, the umpire is empowered to make his own decision. And at this point, you know, that's not a, you know, the kind of the eventuality you're anticipating hasn't become a reality where they've forgotten how to call balls and strikes. I don't think that's a, you know, immediate future concern, but I think it's something that should be thought through. And of course, the kind of the fallback options, if there is a malfunction, if there's a, if something else needs to prompt, if there needs to be a, you know, whatever the, you know, 0.1% of the time there's a malfunction or less than that at this point with the tracking rates at the major league level. You know, thinking through the mechanics of that is certainly something we're, you know, getting more testing, more repetitions under our belt to get more experience to handle those situations better.
Bobby, you are at the moment a neutral party. I want to give you the last word here. I think we agree that the automated strike zone is inevitable. It's coming. It's a matter of when, not if. I just really just want to get your take, having been in the game for so long. Do you think this is a good thing for the game long term? And why or why not?
I mean, I think it's just an advantage that we should give every opportunity to be a part of our game. I think the fact that you could have a strike zone that is, you know, not with human error, if you will, and as limited as that human error is now, the fact that you can eliminate that, I think that's an advantage to the game and should only make the game, you know, more exciting and better. I think that just as we have instant replay, really to just try to get, you know, closer to that 100% mark on the plays at hand, you know, to have a strike zone that's, you know, perhaps 100% accurate or 99.9% accurate. I mean, I think that's a desired outcome for fans and the players in the game. It does change things. It's not necessarily in a comfort zone for all of us. And there will be challenges, of course, whether that's with technology or challenges with, you know, just establishing what that strike zone is and players not getting different strike zones in different ballparks. And, you know, they're supposed to be the same, but they're not. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be a process for, you know, making sure those adjustments are made and calibrated and functioning at a high level. And, you know, I think ultimately, you know, finding ways to get surefire accuracy, I think, is an advantage to the game. I think we can't forget, you know, how, you know, check swings, for example, are something that's currently not part of replay. It's currently not going to be affected by a strike zone. So there's other things in the game that are still going to have to be measured and they're still going to have challenges. But I think this is one that we should look forward to in time.
Bobby, Ben, Wayne, thank you for joining us. Thanks to Sabre for making all this work. This was great. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, guys.